Chapter 5. Tresolian. There were windows along part of Call's route that looked down at the vast milky ball of Tresolian A2. Someone, somewhen, a long time ago, had marked its name as Etrian upon the star charts. Nobody knew quite why, but if the name meant cold, small, and unimpressive, it wouldn't have surprised Call. Tresolian was a three-star system. At the system core was the primary Tresolian A, a large blue-white star in the mid-stages of life, with a solar output several million times that of Sol. The other two stars were a pair of tidally locked red dwarfs that orbited Tresolian A at a distance 1,000 times further than Neptune was from Sol. Though an inconceivable distance to the average human mind, the stars were dangerously close in stellar terms. The system's four planets suffered insanely erratic orbits and were tormented by conflicting solar winds. This type of star system was common in the galaxy, but it was rare to find habitable worlds there, or planets at all. Worlds around such stars were catapulted into space during their formation, or torn apart before they were born. Those that did survive were inevitably radblasted into sterility. Tresolian was no fit place for a human being, but the conditions that made Tresolian dangerous to human life made it useful to humanity. An unusual combination of gravitational flux and aggressive solar winds turned the four worlds into cosmic forges. Their atmospheres were rich with exotic heavy elements and precious isotopes. It was the Heptalogon's purpose to coordinate the harvest of these things. Each of the four planets had their own city-sized orbital mining platforms, but the Heptalogon was the largest of them, comprising seven stations anchored by tether tubes driven right the way through the icy heart of Etrian's lonely moonlet, Momus. The interior of Momus had been hollowed out and was also inhabited. Between the tube tethers, long strings of macro cabling tied the stations together in a complex web, suspending subsidiary platforms between the main and allowing transit between all points on a bewildering number of routes. Although involved in resource acquisition itself, the Heptalogon's main purpose was to act as the processing hub for all elements harvested from the system. In Momus's frigid center, various gaseous compounds were compressed into ingots of bizarre metals, then shipped up the tether tubes to station Primer for out-system export. As the Heptalogon was the nearest thing Tresolian could boast to a civilized world, it hosted the capital, its military command, organs of governance, and so forth. This was no different to thousands of other similar outposts all over human space, and under normal circumstances, Tresolian would have remained a backwater. Had it not been for the major warp conduit that passed through the system on the way to the strategically vital nexus system of Beta Garmon. Tresolian was Mechanicum. There had been overtures from the Imperium that the operations be turned over to Terran control, but the Martian Synod, unwilling to relinquish a potentially vital strategic asset, had dithered and procrastinated for years, all the while apportioning other roles to the Tresolian cities to increase their importance, until finally the Tresolian Four had collectively been designated as a forge world, with all the rights and responsibilities thereof. Tresolian's position made it politically important, so the Tresolian system remained Martian, whatever that meant in those uncertain times. Though the war was far away, it impacted on every aspect of station life. Fuel they had plenty of. Water was scarce, but could be sourced from the miserably poor cometary belt of the outer system. Food was trickier to provide, grown in the enormous underground agri-farms of Tresolian A3. Parts and machinery were in shorter supply still. Tresolian had an abundance of treasure, but a dearth of simpler materials. Flesh and metal suffered together. Organics were malnourished. Many an adept was getting by on bionics held together by jury-rigged repairs. Whatever the privations they must suffer, Call said to Friedisch, others lived under worse circumstances. and the mining must go on for the good of the Imperium. Their work was important, if not particularly glamorous. Domina Hester Aspertia Sigma Sigma, Supreme Majus Militara of Trizolion, was not pleased when Call reached the Extraction Protection Operations Center in Quinta Station. She whirled around to face him as he hurried through the door, all six spiked aggressive meters of her.
Tech Acolytum Belisarius Call,
she augmented in simultaneous Gothic, Binaric, Ryzan form Lingua Technis, and an obscure form of Novabyte Call had only ever heard from her vox speakers.
You're late.
The noosphere around her seethed with digital animosity. Pistons and gears whined as a dozen tech adepts tensed under the Domina's wide-cast anger.
I am late, Domina, said Call with a short bow, attempting to hurry past her to his station. I'm most sorry. I have been delayed with experiments of my own at...
Silence,
she blurted. A torrent of binaric invective poured out of her, so vile in nature Tesla twitched. She ran at Call, her mechapeds rattling off the deck like stubber fire punching through a corrugated plasteel sheet.
Tardiness is proximate to inefficiency. Inefficiency is proximate to obsolescence. Do you wish me to enact an order of decommission?
No, Domina, said Call.
He hunched low and grovelled. The Domina liked that sort of thing from her inferiors.
Or perhaps you would prefer to join my Skitari, in order to serve me better. They, Tech Acolytum, are never, ever late.
Call glanced sideways to the door, where a pair of the Domina's personal guards stood sentry. Resplendent in brass and grey, they were as inert as robots, with no sign of independent life. The Domina's Skitari were little better than tech thralls. Rumour had it she kept their cortexes offline, operating them directly at all times. Their minds were trapped in a perpetual rapture, drugged by communion with the motive force. Some of the machine cult would welcome the fate, but Call quailed inwardly at the thought. Independence was all to him.
To your place!
The Domina reared up to her full height. Her loose robe parted a moment, allowing a glimpse of the metal canisters attached to her chest like so many swine at the teat. The cylinders rattled across a patchwork of copper cabling and plasteel plates, the things inside fed by a tangle of wires and tubes. She snatched her gown back across them.
The second shift is due to commence its descent into the middle reaches, and they are waiting for our support, impatiently waiting.
Once again, my apologies, Domina, said Call.
He sent Tesla away to his own station with a pulsed thought code. Aspertia Sigma Sigma swept off, mechadendrites waving around her shoulders like serpents ready to strike.
Provost Acquisitor Mu-99, we are ready to provide escort.
A steel-faced adept appeared on a floating pict screen, painted in shades of blue and heavily banded with image writing lines. All the viewers on the station were of that type. Their projection elements were made of semi-living, light-emitting diodes, whose chemistry was harvested from deep-sea bacteria. This form of display resisted the radioactive squalls of the system best. Call had learned how to make the displays during a brief stint working for a Lex Mechanic Amigificatio. It was amazing what one could pick up in a place like Trizolion. Extraction Protection Operations was a five-tiered room fronted by a massive semicircular window looking down on Etrian. At the left edge of the view, Heptalagon Station Quarter was visible as an oblate steely mirror reflecting the planet's glow. The tether tube holding it out from the moon was a needle of light. At the bottom of the window, the crusted surface of Momus lurked. The sun bathed everything in a snowfield glare, so harsh it was painful to look upon. The tiers of the room were full of control decks for the protection automata, and each one was lavishly supplied with imaging equipment that shone with the same uncompromising light. Call hurried down three flights of stairs to his station and slipped into the uncomfortable chair. Tri-D-light weaves popped up around him. A miniature hololith flicked on directly in front of his face. Status readouts for the three drones under his command activated as the desk sensed his presence. Auto-prayers burbled from its speakers as the machines self-blessed.
The drones were presented as red, outline schematics, their outer surfaces rendered translucent to show the condition of the subsystems beneath their armour. Automaton One's port engines glowed a troubling orange. Call tutted. He had been told Automaton One had been repaired. He glanced back at the Domina. She was engaged in conversation with the Provost Inquisitor. Her primary hands were still twitching with annoyance. Now was not the time to bring it up. Call pulled out a steel-cased communion cable and slotted it into a socket behind his ear. The spring retractor was overwound, and the cable pulled annoyingly at the side of his head, forcing his neck into an uncomfortable position. He partitioned his consciousness, parceling it out between the three automata and the flight desk. Facilitated by his superior intelligence corps, the view in his mind's eye split into quadrants. The top of his field of vision was occupied by the view of the operations room gathered by his mortal eyes. The lower half was split into three picked fields, each showing a view from one of the automata's augers. In the sharp images, the world of Etrian loomed large.
"Stand by for clamp retraction."
The Domina half sang the words. They were accompanied by a data-rich stream of binaric. A quartet of eyeless servitors began a hymn of safe launching. Tesla joined his rich voice to the song at a silent command from Call. The real world retreated. Screed rolled up the side of Call's view. The back and forth between the Domina and the Provost Inquisitor rendered into glowing green text, and the runs of zeros and ones of rapid augment-to-augment binaric. A larger panel of text blinked through his awareness.
"Extractors lodged,"
it announced, demanding he acknowledge. Pulses of electricity ran seamlessly from the organic pathways of his brain into the nanowires grafted to his nervous system and out into the machine world, confirming he had received the message. Truly, the machine god worked marvels. He swiveled Automaton Two's visual array downwards. Five extractor scows were dropping fast towards Trisolian A2. They were massive things, not true spacecraft, but large, raft-like structures, crewed by adepts garbed in huge armoured environment suits. Bulky servitors and rad-hardened automata assisted them. Reminiscent of the baleen of extinct Terran cetaceans, the scow's fronts sported huge spreading veins of copper, between which were threaded thousands of kilometres of fine wires. These jaws projected a magnetic funnel that directed the desired gases into separation units. From there, the harvest was pumped into bulbous clusters of containment tanks running the length of the vessel. Dozens of massive hemispherical directional impellers occupied the scow's undersides. Viewed side-on, the grav motors and the power plants to run them dominated the craft, like the hidden portions of icebergs. They made up the majority of the craft's mass. Etrian had a hard pull. The extractor scows dropped fast, towards the racing clouds of the gas giant. The tiny figures walking the decks dwindled to dots.
"Flight release,"
commanded the Domina. And by her thoughts and her words, so it was done.
"All praise the machine god. All praise the Omnisire who is his messenger. All praise the motive force by which he moves among us,"
the drone operators chanted. Call's split view lurched, and the three-part image diversified. If he didn't concentrate, the conflicting input would make him nauseous. His charges were falling. Thruster bursts sent them hurtling after the falling scows. The crude decks flashed past. He had the briefest glimpse of an armoured adept directing his underlings. Then the scows were above his machines. The clouds raced up to greet him. The robots were practically autonomous. Their programming took them down into the surging currents of the gas giant without much input. But such were the challenges of operating in Etrian's frigid methane atmosphere that each flight of three required human oversight. The robots' wetware were not up to the task alone. Incredibly, there were things alive down there, and they did not like visitors. Call's view shook as the automata encountered the upper layers of Trisolian A2's atmosphere. Flight smoothed out a little as they penetrated the upper cloud layers and plunged down deeper through counter-rotating strata of gas. As they reached their destination, some 100 kilometres within, the feed smoothed further, finally settling into crisp sharpness as Call activated the system's delicate image stabilizers. Icons flicked on his displays. Minor toxins rang. The environment stressed the machines. Such small shrieks of alarm were normal. 30 Voltarex Stratos automata spread out into a polyhedral protection configuration. Call, whose machines were in the uppermost part of the formation, jinked his flight aside. The scouts dropped through the gap into the protective cordon, spread out and made ready to begin resource gathering. Call swerved his automata back into position. His upgraded intelligence core gave him a 7% efficiency gain over his fellow cloud riders. He reined in his desire to show off. That sort of thing could get him caught. The operation followed the pattern it did every day. The scouts took up a formation designed to maximize resource extraction. The thick atmosphere glowed with ionization as the collector's magnetic arrays activated. Trailing coronal discharge from their static bleed fins, the scows began their work. Call looked out over the boiling clouds. In some places, vortexes carved wells several 100 kilometres deep, and he peered towards the planet's busy heart, down throats of twisting gases lined with veins of lightning. His machines would bounce and judder violently as they passed over these halls, but their images remained eerily still, their automatic adjustment a blessing of man's technological wisdom. Every stratum of the atmosphere crackled with light, conjured from friction. Wet snows of frozen ethane and methane slapped against the drone's armoured carapaces. Exotic lightning forms danced like live things upon the cloud tops. The display delighted Call. And yet, the true glories were down in the gas giant's unobtainable centre, where massive pressure compressed methane into bizarre super ices, and the freezing temperatures of the upper levels escalated at a geometric rate to levels greater than those on the surfaces of stars. Men weren't meant to exist in such a place, but there they were. Call was proud of that. Such things mankind had achieved, such things he might achieve again. During these periods of quiet, the automata could perform most of their duties without intervention. Call kept half an eye on what they were doing. He was not particularly interested in the holy study of robotics. It was fascinating, but his passion remained for bioengineering. Still, he had much to learn from the Legio Cybernetica and their grasp of the artificial mind. He could not ignore any facet of the Ars Mechanica if he were to achieve his ambitions of complete technological mastery. Knowledge was all he craved. Call's lack of patience for politics and position was already becoming known. The amount of time he had left before he had to stop changing role was running out. He wondered what he should do next. Perhaps now was the time to apply himself fully to the role of biologian. Once he had accrued a little power and a little status in that subcult, he could recommence his wider-ranging exploration of science. That was permitted. His wandering thoughts were abruptly refocused by an alarm chime.
"Hostile xenophobes approaching, my warriors," said the Domina,
her voice reaching the speech centres of his brain via direct inload.
"Prepare to intercept."
An Allspex grid showed several hundred small dots converging on the extractor's position. They moved quickly, in straight lines against the wind, coming obliquely at the flotilla from the rear.
"A large shoal,"
canted the Domina.
"Maniples 7 through 10, reverse course to engage. The rest of you close up the net. Let the scows work as long as they can."
Screed informed Call of a request from the Inquisitor Provost, sent wordlessly to Aspertia Sigma Sigma. "Status inquiry. There's a lot of them today. Shall we turn back?"
"Negative,"
read the Domina's reply. Call jinked his maniple of automata to close up the gap as 9 robots left the formation and headed for the rear. The area of protection around the extractors shrunk by 20%. The Voltarax's sensoria could not rotate backwards, and so Call could not see what happened behind the formation. But the sound of autocannon fire carried over the wind to the machine's audio sensors. A shrieking alarm from a nearby flight desk, quickly silenced, signified the loss of the first automaton. Lesser alarms spoke of heavy damage to 2 more. A second alarm alerted the center to a second death. Then a third.
"They're breaking through!"
One of Call's colleagues broke protocol and spoke aloud.
3 units destroyed. You will pay for their loss,"
snarled Aspertia back.
"Maniples 6 and 2 reinforce."
Call grinned. 2 was his maniple. He was one of Aspertia's best. He knew she wouldn't be able to keep him away from the action for long, no matter how angry she was with him. The units under Call's command swooped out of the defense box at his urging, falling into a close arrow formation. They moved with perfect synchronicity, only a few meters apart. On his displays, icons flashed indicating where Aspertia wanted him to go, but Call had read the situation and was already on his way. The shoal of xenotic life forms was ahead. A gaseous bladder was their principal feature. The density of the atmosphere allowed a certain extravagance of form. These were not diaphanous creatures, but solid, well-armoured hunters. Stable clathrates armoured the upper surfaces of the flight bladder and the multiple jointed legs that trailed behind it. Underneath all was a sagging mouth and several boneless nozzles that projected gas in a high-velocity stream, allowing the creatures to control their motion with remarkable efficiency. They surged about like darting birds, even in the 1,000-kilometer-an-hour winds of the planet. Nobody knew what the things were, if they were intelligent or simply animals, or if they were native or alien to the world. The Forge World's xenogenitors itched to get hold of a specimen, but it had so far proved difficult. After they were killed, most fell into the raging turmoil of the planet's interior. The rare specimens snagged by the scows had disintegrated during transit back to the stations. Their clathrate armour was hard enough to deflect autocannon rounds, but after death it destabilised rapidly, and the soft tissues quickly followed. They had no utility to the Imperium, so studying them was not a priority, and of interest only to Xenos-obsessed eccentrics. The effort to gather a specimen distracted from the cloud mining. All the Trezolian Mechanicum required of the Xenos was that they stay away or have the grace to die quickly, and so the Xenogenitors remained in ignorance of their mysteries. The cloud creatures were far more nimble than the robots and swiped at them with limbs that were brutal in defiance of their delicacy. Unit 1 of Maniple 9 lost a fan pod, and though its shepherd overrode its innate programming, took direct control and fired off the machine's void engines in an attempt to stabilize it, it went into a spin and plummeted into the roiling clouds. Call watched his robots carefully as they drew firing lines on the nearest clutch of the Xenos. Autocannon fire, flaring with phosphor, traced lines across the sky. The machine's limited brains could follow these ranging markers easily, and missiles quickly followed. A creature rocked under the impact of Call's assault. Clathrate armour collapsed. A missile pierced soft flesh beneath and passed out of the other side before detonating in the air. The creature was mortally wounded and lost altitude, leaking a stream of bright gas from its breached shell.
"Do not allow them within the cordon,"
said the Domina in her multiple tongues.
"Plug the gap. Hold the line."
Call broke off his automata and swung them around before they got too close to the creatures. One of them lunged out from the swarm, a serrated blade on the end of its limb slicing down at his lead machine. Call saw it coming and made the robot dodge aside with a burst from its manoeuvring thrusters. At that distance, it took 1/2 a second for his commands to reach the machines. That was far too much lag. The creature's weapon missed his device by mere inches. Then he was past. He got a quick view of the magnitude of the swarm. Thousands floated from the deeps, their crystalline armour glinting in the endless lightning. "I recommend an immediate withdrawal," Call stated, data pulsing a picked capture of the rising swarm to his mistress. "See what ascends, Domina." Aspertia spared a picosecond of consideration. During that brief time, she appraised the tactical situation herself and performed an analysis of the extractor's progress.
"Negative,"
she canted, so everyone could hear her dismissal of Call's suggestion.
"We have not reached resource parity for this mission. Departing now would result in a net loss to the Mechanicum. Remain. Fight."
Call once again intruded himself into the robots, boosting them back towards the fight. The situation was worsening by the second. Thousands of the creatures were attacking, picking off the extractor's defenders, getting closer to the larger machines pillaging their domain. Call had his maniple concentrate fire on the largest of the creatures, a monster 50 meters across. His autocannon shots blew chunks out of its armor. Multiple missile impacts detonated across its upper side. It was still advancing on the scows as he turned his robots again and flew them to a safe distance. The Mechanicum didn't even know why these things swarmed the extractors. They didn't seem capable of eating either flesh or metal. It could have been purely territorial, of course. It didn't matter. They had to die. Call sifted through the mass of data exloaded by his charges. The extractors were at 74% capacity. Every dead automaton meant that number had to be higher. Battle was a game of economics. Cut and run now, and they would be in resource deficit. But staying to even it up might worsen their losses. Call was about to swing around for another pass when his Ford auger display lit up with dozens of new contacts. "More Xenos coming up from below. They're targeting the rearmost extractor," he pulsed emotionlessly, like a machine, as befitted a man of his calling. His heart, however, pounded with adrenaline. Aspertia ordered more of the robots to break formation and head off this new threat. The shifting polyhedron shrank closer to the extractor rafts. There was now 50 meters between the overlapping fields of fire of the automata and the outermost parts of the rafts, no more than that. "This is going to be close," muttered Call.
"Check your emotive responses,"
whispered the tech priest at the command desk next to Call's.
"You are modus unbecoming. You shame us all."
"Oh, shut up, Baskin," said Call. Call's machines passed over the central scow. Flashing lights blinked warnings that he stay away. Screed and infographic told him the same story of exceeded proximity limits. He ignored them, overriding his robot's idiot impulse to obey the data shout, and he pushed them closer. He had to get nearer. Like the Leviathan of ancient myth rising from the ocean, a gigantic specimen of the Trisolian Xenos broke through the cloud by the lead extractor. Plumes of vapour and chilling gas cascaded from its clathrate shell. It was immense. 200 meters across. A swarm of smaller examples accompanied it, waving their transparent bladed limbs in the epitome of alien menace. The grav waves of the repulsor motors caught on the giant shell, rocking the scow dangerously. Call watched helplessly as an orange-suited adept flipped over the guardrails and went plummeting to his death. "Where below?" Call widecast, cutting through Aspertia Sigma Sigma's dominance protocols to contact the raft directly, bringing a wave of electronic enmity from the Domina. If she had a verbal rebuke to follow, he did not hear it. His mind, sped to lightning alacrity by his modified intelligence core, Call took in and assimilated all the data he could. His Voltarax's limited minds were preparing to unleash their weaponry in a standard suppression pattern at the giant, an action that would have as much effect as discharging a las pistol into the ground. Call summoned up a flickering succession of data overlays, settling on a sonar map showing pressure differentials in the creature's gas capillaries. They had no nervous or circulatory system as the Mechanicum understood it. They were attuned to the world they inhabited, violently tempered creatures of ice and gas. Call slaved all his maniple's weapons to his own will. The targeting arrays for the three machines lay atop one another. This was the sort of thing a man needed a good intelligence corps for, and Call's was superlative. He selected pressure nodes within the beast, stripping the clathrate armour off with hammering volleys of autocannon fire. Call conducted an interlaced auspex sweep of the armour. It had cracked, no more. Cursing, he put all the machine's engines on full reverse burn. Engine pods rotated to the inverted position, and the Voltaraxes sped backwards. Call preferred to have his Voltaraxes speed by their targets on these Guardian missions, out of range of the Trizolian Xenos' shard claws. But there was no time. Urgent ringing distracted him. The left engine of number two was burning hot. No time for that either. He had the autocannons target the weakened armour sections. Smaller beasts came at his craft. They seemed to sense the weakness of number two, and they mobbed it, clamping themselves to its armoured hull and thrashing at it with their limbs. The weight dragged at the machine pitilessly. The engine blew out, smoke presaging a flaring burst of flame. The machine's system alarms whooped as it pitched to the side and fell. Plaintive, unpanicked pleas for aid bleated from its cybernetic cortex as it vanished into the boiling clouds. Call ignored the streaming pressure and temperature indicators blinking at him as Automaton 2 fell to its death. He concentrated on the island-sized beast which attacked the raft. Teeth grinding with the tension, he ignited the Voltarax's void jets and pushed them up to full burn. The semi-intelligent brains of the machines were reduced to passengers. He was in control. He jinked his robots through rushing mobs of the creatures and swung them about once clear. As he prepared them for another attack run, the giant beast wrapped water-clear arms around the scow. Claws of high-pressure ice soared through the metal. Gas, gathered so carefully, erupted from crumpled containment cells. Men, cyborgs, and automata fell from the pitching deck. Others hung from the rails, moments from death, or poked hopelessly at the Leviathan, assailing them with electro-gaffs and attractor hooks. Call banked his automata back around. A quick calculation told him he needed more firepower. He was faced with a stark choice. Either the men and the raft would be lost, or he could do something about it, inevitably revealing his illicit upgrades. He took a moment to consider. He would be found out eventually, that was certain, and being found out under heroic circumstances would only serve his cause. But if he did what he was considering doing, then he would have put one foot firmly into the court of the Mechanicum's great game. There would be no hiding from then on. His machines hung in the air, their usurped cortexes bridling at the lack of action. Through their eyes, Call saw robots and Xenos engaged in aerial battle.
"Call, what are you doing?"
demanded Hester Aspertia Sigma Sigma.
"Recommit to the skirmish now."
The scow shook in the arms of the Xenos. Grav repulsors broke, showering sparks into the clouds. He could not hear the screams of the crew, but he could imagine them. He could imagine their terror. It was now or never. There was one factor that tipped Belisarius Call into acting. He cared. A thought deployed a high-grade dominance code into the operations center, bringing all the automata into his direct command. His field of view subdivided into multiple individual fields, crowded with status graphics around the edge. Cogitators and servitors alike rang out alarms at Call's invasion. The other tech adepts were confused at first, as their units slipped away from their oversight and their desks went dead, then angry when they realized who had done it.
"It's Call,"
one blurted in a saw-like machine voice. Call was aware of the chaos he had caused only on the periphery of his being. His machine-meshed consciousness was overfilled with the tricky business of coordinating 36 somewhat recalcitrant war machines. Semi-organic minds squealed at him for higher-level access codes. Call squashed them all. He couldn't do this alone, not in his wildest fantasies. He was forced to rely on the machines themselves. Quickly, he formulated an effective battle plan, overriding centuries of cybernetica data custom in an instant. Hands yanked at him, but he did not relent. He clung on to his seat as his colleagues attempted to drag him from his chair and set up the machines in a whirling helix similar to the cavalier's caracol of ancient days. The helix rotated tightly, too quick for the Xenos to snare, their autocannons trained on the weakened points of the alien creature's carapace, firing constantly. Someone had him in an ineffective headlock. Fortunately for Call, tech priests neglected their bodies. The band assailing him were as yet too lowly to possess much in the way of augmetic strength. The automata continued their spiral of death, hammering the carapace of the Xenos monster with their cannons. Ammo counters ticked to zero. Weapon barrels on the schematics blinked, indicating heat so great the barrels were near to failure. Call kept up.
Stop!
Shouted Aspertia. Call assumed she meant him, but the following data blurt went out to the others.
Unhand Call! He's breaking the law!
One shouted in anguish.
He dishonors the machines!
Weak fists pummeled him. Someone scrabbled at his hardline, trying to yank it out, scratching his skin around the input port. Call let go of his seat and backhanded his assailant hard, and the man lurched away with a yell, but the others grabbed his arm and pulled. The operation of so many automata at once was taking its toll on him. The displays cast into his mind blurred. His intelligence core ran hot. He feared it was slowly poaching his brain.
Stop!
Canted Aspertia. Again, the data blurt went to his fellows.
Unhand Call now!
The assault ceased. His outraged colleagues stepped back. Dimly, Call heard the clank of fully augmented bodies surrounding him. A Skitari rad pistol levelled itself at his temple. He could practically feel his gene code degrading from the nearness of the barrel. Cancers birthed in his skin in that moment, he was sure. But he kept on with his task. Call sent targeting information to the Sethino Jinn in the robot's missile launchers. He had to trust them to do the rest. He was close to systems failure.
Tell the Inquisitor Provost to order the extractors away, he said thickly. Engines at full power.
He could barely speak. The heat in his head was unbearable.
He has to move. Now!
Simultaneously, the Havoc launchers on the machines spat out their loads of missiles. They popped from their tubes like celebratory fireworks. Dozens of closely spaced explosions engulfed the creature in fire. The clathrates were weakened just enough that the missiles punched through to the insubstantial flesh beneath and detonated the gaseous physiology of the beast. It wallowed in the sky ablaze end to end, setting fire to dozens of the lesser creatures before it fell. With a gasp that brought him close to vomiting, Call severed his connection, setting the automata loose to hunt down the remaining aliens under their own power. He slumped over his desk. Displays flickered out. He had the horrible idea the burning he smelled was coming from inside his own skull. Groggily, he lifted his head. Behind the two Skitari pointing their weapons at his head was a ring of horrified flesh and mechanical faces. Call grinned at them. There was blood in the back of his throat. He could taste it. Aspertia Sigma Sigma rattled forwards, sinuous and sinister, pushing her minions out of the way.
Belisarius Call. Tech Acolytum Rograde. Speak now or be destroyed. What you have done goes against all 15 minor laws of the operations of robotics and is open blasphemy against one of the major commandments of machine intelligence interface, to wit, thou shalt not presume to usurp the machine god in the programming of his most holy vessels.
She bent down. She was so long, the movement brought her mirror mask to the side of his face.
In short,
she hissed directly into his ear,
we do not reprogram our automata on the fly, Tech Acolytum. Why did you do it? Your answer had better be sufficiently impressive, or I will perform the sentence of lobotomization and internment in a servitor chassis myself, this instant.
Because,
Call said. The heat in his brain addled his thoughts.
Because it was efficient, he managed.
and because I won.
Kill him!
Said one of his colleagues.
Kill him now for his transgression against the holy machine!
The Domina swiveled her mirror mask face to look upon the speaker. He cringed fearfully.
That is not your decision to make, Hanlo Talk 09. I will not deactivate this one.
She peered at Call for a long time.
You and I are going to have a little talk, I think, Belisarius Call.
Servo motors whirring, she reared up.
Take him to the repair bay. Have him turned into, then deliver him to my quarters.
By the time a pair of servitors came to drag him away, Call was unconscious.